the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
Less than 3% of Africans qualify for mortgage financing, which explains why across the continent you see partially built structures dotted across the landscape, waiting for the next cash injection to finish the project. Most houses in Africa are built with cash. It's a slow grinding process, and the houses are often subpar when built. Is there a better way? Well, there's a fascinating test case underway on the Nairobi Securities Exchange to raise housing financing for the poor, and it involves blockchain and a company called Empower that has come up with a novel rent-to-own model that even streetwalkers and informal sector workers can afford. Last year, Empower struck a partnership with the Nairobi Securities Exchange focused on developing a Cardano blockchain-based platform for tokenizing real-world assets, specifically to address affordable housing finance in Kenya and across Africa. It's a model which has huge implications for Africa, and joining us now to explain it all is Glenn Jordan, founder and CEO of Empower. Glenn, it's good to talk to you again. A lot has happened, I think, in the last year since we spoke. This deal with the Nairobi Securities Exchange, it's a breakthrough for bringing affordable housing to those who simply don't qualify for bank mortgages. Maybe explain how it works and how it came about.
Yeah, thanks, Kieran. Great to chat again. Really, it's about addressing the challenge that we have in the affordable housing finance space in Africa. And that is that, and we understand it, obviously, from a risk perspective, we have one housing finance product, and that is a mortgage. And a mortgage is fit for purpose for the formerly employed. It doesn't work for those who are outside of the formal employment sector, or for those who supplement their income through the informal sector. And if you look at anybody across Africa, everybody's got a hustle. Even if they're employed, everybody's got a hustle. Everybody's got a side hustle. Everybody's supplementing their income. The challenge with that is that more than 85% of that is unrecorded. And therefore, when you're trying to supply housing finance, the challenge is obviously that you can't get visibility of that. So therefore, to your point, that's why we have such low figures of access to housing. The reality is that most people are paying a lot of money for housing. Because of this challenge, the lack of supply has actually meant that people are paying a lot of money for poor quality housing. So the cost to quality ratio that you're getting of what you're actually paying for is ridiculous, to be honest. And I always use the example of Cape Town, where people in Im and Zamayetu are paying between 4 and 7 times more per square meter than people in the center of Cape Town for an apartment. And that's to rent the land on which they build their shack. So it's not a function of poverty, it's a function of systemic issue. And so the challenge is to address this in a way that meets the needs of the consumers on the ground, that we can supply them finance. But also the challenge, obviously, is you don't want your bank deposit to disappear. You don't want your pension fund to disappear for this investment. So how do we attract investment into this space? And really, it's about putting these two together. And that's what this project is about.
All right. So we're going to come to the blockchain part of this in a minute. But I mentioned in the beginning that just 3% of Africans qualify for a mortgage bond. You've covered that. It's largely we're dealing with an informal sector that is unrecorded and therefore of no interest to the banks whatsoever. You've come up with a solution which actually makes this visible. So you would look at a household and it might be a streetwalker, one streetwalker working in there. There might be another guy who's got an Uber bike delivering food around the city. And you are able to actually monitor that and track and record it and make it into a financial instrument. Explain that.
Exactly. That's exactly it. And the point around that is that these individuals that you've just mentioned, everybody is paying rent. They're paying rent to live. So, unfortunately, a lot of in the formal sector, a lot of the assumption is that people are not paying to live where they're living. When you look across and you see informality, the assumption is people are not paying. The reality is as I've just outlined, people are paying a lot of money, even in the informal sector. So the point around that is they are paying. The question is they cannot get ownership. so they cannot build any financial stability or quality. So the point around that is exactly that. How do we enable them to continue renting, if you like, but then to save towards the product as opposed towards having a commitment of a high rate that then forces you into 20 years of payment when your income is intermittent and variable. That's the biggest issue. So how can we manage that flexibility in a manner that meets the needs, as I say, of both that family and capital? And obviously, if people are paying rent, we have processes whereby people are making money from leases. Okay, people are prepared to invest in that. Somebody's making money out of that. So the question is how can we create a combined instrument, if you like, which is a mix between a rental and ownership that enables you to develop that ownership or save towards that ownership or contribute towards that ownership over time, rather than the mortgage structure, which says, okay, for 20 years, you have to pay X per month. And if you don't, you're in breach of contract, and therefore we'll take the asset back.
All right. Now let's talk about the benefits of using the blockchain, in this case, the Cardano blockchain, to solve the problem. Explain why the blockchain here is so important.
The reason for blockchain is twofold. One is to validate transactions. So it's around providing visibility. So immediately when you mention blockchain, a lot of people go straight, obviously, to crypto, to, you know, the
speculative aspects of
it. That's crypto. The word I'm looking for. Thank you. The speculative aspect of it. So many people go to the speculative, but forgetting that the blockchain is actually a ledger system that records transactions in an immutable and immediate fashion. That's the key to the technology. And that's what we're looking for here, is to provide a mechanism that we're not relying on financial statements. We're not relying on somebody giving recordings. Every transaction is recorded onto the blockchain and therefore becomes accessible to capital providers and the payees in such a way, in an immutable fashion, so that there's no dispute. And this is very important in terms of going forward, because we're not reliant on some intermediary to do an audit of this. It's done by the technology. That's the first part. The second part is around the ability to tokenize that and to be able to divide this up, because this is the key aspect about investment into the space. Nobody's wanting to invest into one individual, and housing tends to be project-based finance. We invest into housing projects or into REITs, which are then owned by the company. But we're looking to provide a mechanism. So if we look at the traditional mortgage sector, the bank provides the mortgage to the customer and then securitizes that mortgage and on-sells it to long-term investors like pension funds, etc. Okay. What the blockchain enables us to do is to create a digital asset that enables us to start small, to be able to scale, and takes this tokenization and makes it more accessible. And that's what we're doing with the NSE, is to make this more accessible to investors, that we don't have to rely on the mortgage system to get to that stage, but we can create an investment mechanism for investors to invest into these rent-to-own contracts, which provide returns.
All right. So tell us a bit about Empower. Like, how many countries are you in? What kind of growth have you seen in the last 12 months? And it looks like you are looking for investors on the one side, and you're also looking for housing projects on the other.
Absolutely. The easier part of that aspect is the housing projects, because really what we're doing is we're taking excess stock. So for developers, particularly, for example, in Kenya, a developer does a development, will be able to sell some via cash, some via a very few under mortgage, and then often gets left with stock. And so a lot of the time we're taking that excess stock, and then you're able to invest into that. We can tokenize that and people can invest into that excess stock. So it's around asset-backed financing, digitizing that, and then attracting the capital. So to your point, the projects are easier to come across than the capital, because the capital is a little bit more innovative, but that's why we're utilizing the blockchain, to address the aspect of transparency and liquidity. So the ability to, because again, this is long-term finance. Housing finance is long-term finance, but a lot of funders or investors don't necessarily want to be stuck in these projects forever or for even for long term. So we're providing liquidity through this mechanism. So the blockchain enables us to address both. And so that's why we're specifically really focused right now on trying to attract more capital into this space. And there's a, as I outlined, the cost that people are paying is high. So this is not charity. This is real returns that can be made by investing into infrastructure that is really required by the people who need it most. So we're really using commercial principles to address social needs in the most practical way possible. And that's the objective here. And that's what we're trying to do, particularly from the capital side. And that's our biggest challenge, is to get the innovation in that space, the innovative mindset that people are, because most people think social investment is obviously not, doesn't provide the same level of return as other investments. And that's what we're trying to prove, is that it does. And
I imagine it's a little bit of a hard sell when you're talking to traditional finance people. You're going to them and you're saying, what we're doing is we're offering a rent-to-own type of mortgage finance product. And they would immediately think of the banks. And in the banking system, where you have, I guess it's between maybe 3 or 4% of their mortgage books are under some form of distress at any one time. Those figures might be a bit high, but they were at one time around that area. Now, as soon as you're sort of 2 months in arrears with a mortgage finance loan, the bank will send you a notice. You know, they'll try to get you gently to catch up on your arrears, find out what the situation is. But if you cannot, they very quickly move to the legal process and they'll send you a Section 129 notice in terms of the National Credit Act. And then the whole legal process starts and it can be disastrous for people. So you are coming in with a different model here, because your blockchain record or your ledger will show you what is the payment record of your customers, so that any capital investor would be able to see that and will be able to establish the risk. So maybe give us an idea, how does that risk compare with the banking sector?
The irony is that it is significantly lower, because we don't have to go through that legal process, because it's a tenancy agreement, not a mortgage. So this is the key aspect. This is the key aspect around what we're doing, because the distribution of the capital is actually through the developers, not through a bank. So that's the effect, if you like, that's the distribution of the capital mechanism. So the ownership is retained. So the asset is retained. It's not transferred to the individual. And that's why the ledger is so important, because if I've paid off 30% of my mortgage, okay, if we trust the banks to record that. But if I'm here with developers and other intermediaries, we don't have those same levels of trust and we don't have those same levels of recordal. But that's why the blockchain is so important. So we're distributing the capital through the developer and that process. So if somebody doesn't pay, like a normal lease agreement, you have a deposit. And as soon as it's acknowledged that they're not paying, okay, that process then starts to get that person out of that lease agreement and to get somebody else in. So ironically, the risk in this environment is not from the individual payer, but it's actually in the pipeline. So in other words, if I've got a pipeline of potential tenants, that's far less risky than the individual payer, because that person can be paying the rental. I like to try and explain it, Karen, in terms of looking at it from a point of view of really like a preference share. You know, a preference share is a mix of asset and an income. And the same process here is we are so used to the mortgage concept of you either own the house or you rent it. But this is rent to own. And so I can get partial ownership. And again, that's why the blockchain is so important, because I can have partial ownership of an asset that represents this underlying asset. So I can get 30% ownership of that property. And then when it's sold or the next person comes in, I'm then the beneficiary of that asset. So we're financially empowering those people who need it most. So for the middle class, housing has become a very important asset for wealth creation. And for the lower classes, they're excluded from this. And this is a part of, again, what we're seeking to achieve, but at no cost effectively to the financial provider, because they've received whatever portion of that is back. So we're combining the two aspects of ownership and rental into an asset into a financial asset that is of value. And nowhere across the world right now, Kieran, is anybody not, are house prices going down, you know, and particularly in Africa, where we've got a very young market, an emerging population, and a massive population growth, these assets are not going down in value. So if I have to move a tenant out and move somebody else in and resell that asset, I'm making the capital appreciation at that time as well. So it's a methodology for, as I say, for providing significant returns for investors.
Now, you did get some capital input from Cardano. Yeah. And it's interesting that you're doing this with the Nairobi Securities Exchange, because my understanding is Nairobi is going through a massive boom at the moment. They've got, like South Africa, a lot of informal settlements, unplanned growth all over the place. They've got planning problems, but they are trying to get on top of it. So my question is, how do they see this solution fitting into solving that problem? And also, what about the housing situation in South Africa? You know, we've got these informal settlements that are sprouting all over the place. It's become a huge national debate. Is this some, what you're offering here, does that offer some solution to municipalities, for example, to provincial governments or even the national government?
Let me answer the South African question first, because it's vitally important. I, right from 1994, at the time of transition, I have said we need a Marshall Plan to invest into townships. The challenge has been is how to invest into townships in a way that meets the needs of investors, that provides returns. This has been the challenge. And the reality is if we look at you know, a lot of people say the current affordable housing crisis around the world, you know, it's unprecedented. We've never experienced this before. We did, actually, after World War II. And after World War II, a lot of the housing stock had been destroyed. And so there was a severe housing shortage, with returning servicemen, et cetera, et cetera. But there was a will to address it. There was a political will to address it. And finance was made available to address it. And that is one of the reasons, the investment in housing was one of the reasons for the boom that happened post-World War II. And so for us in South Africa, the investment into this township environment in a way that meets the needs of these consumers and meets the needs of capital provides us with a mechanism to implement a plan whereby we can uplift the living conditions on a financially sustainable basis. This enables us to do that, to improve the living conditions of people across the country in all of the environments in a way that meets their needs. Because, again, I go back to that point, people are paying a lot of money for a very poor quality product. We can uplift the quality of that product very reasonably and still provide returns for investors. There's nothing to prevent that. The challenge has been the systems to do that. How do I do that for the hawker? How do I do that for the Uber driver? That's what we're addressing. So the point around this is, to your point around the city councils, we're talking to some city councils and some provincial governments at the moment around this, because one of the challenges we have, for example, in the townships is 70% of the properties don't have title, or the title is disputed. But here again, like around the world where we had the mobile telephone that leapfrogged, here around the world, we're addressing building standards. There's a lot happening in the modular and circular environment to create carbon friendly and looking at the complete life cycle of a building as opposed to just the building itself. Because actually what happens when we do that, and so cement and concrete are huge carbon consumers. Rather, they're really bad for the environment. So the point around that is there a mechanism that we can do that? So we're talking at the moment to the councils to find a way that meets the needs of the informal, even those who don't have title, for those, because we can actually put structures in place that uplift the living conditions of the people who are living in their shacks in their backyard, even in the informal sector, that also provides income for the cities. Because right now, without title, that's very challenging to get access to rates and taxes. But the point is rates and taxes, if you've had boycotts or you've had people who haven't paid, rather add to income than take out of their income. In other words, don't, as the city, don't put your hand in their pocket, but help people improve their incomes and take a portion of that improved income. So it's a revenue generating mechanism for the cities as well. So this is absolutely a win-win for everybody. And that's why I'm saying we need a Marshall Plan in South Africa for housing.
And right. I believe the Marshall Plan right being the post-World War II recovery plan that was financed, I think, largely by the United States to get Europe back on its feet again.
Exactly. And here what we need is effectively a equivalent, a Marshall Plan for the townships of South Africa that enables us to increase the density, but at a quality level, and provide the infrastructure in a way that it's paid for and that it can be funded on an ongoing basis. And that is the way that we then start to address the informality, because we're providing that housing in places where there's transport, there's not extensions, there's services already available. We're expanding services, not trying to provide new services, which are incredibly expensive, et cetera, et cetera. And that's the way we address these issues.
Glenn, finally, and very quickly, we are running out of time. What are your plans for 2026?
More of the same, Kieran. So yeah, it's exactly that. It's really around speaking to the funders, the financiers, the investors, and really building more data to demonstrate the success and the validity of this argument. And that's really what we're doing right now. So we're out there talking to investors, talking to capital providers, talking to pension funds, talking to those interested in the uplifting of people, as well as the returns that can be made. So the utilization, the effective utilization of capital in a way that meets social needs really productively. And that's really what our big push for 2026 is, to really expand what we're doing. So we're at the scaling phase of what we've been. We've proven the concept, we've demonstrated the technology, we've built the technology, demonstrated that it works, and now it's around scaling this and through the use of capital.
And how many countries are you in Africa?
We're in 7 countries across Africa, but really active in 3 currently, and that is currently Mozambique, Kenya, and Nigeria.
Fascinating story, and I look forward to hearing more of your successes as the year goes by. So thanks very much for joining us, Glenn. That was Glenn Jordan, founder and CEO of Empower.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.